someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
When my guest stepped into her role at the School of Divinity in the fall of 2017, she made history as the first woman to serve as dean. She has been a mentor and community activist, a leader in redefining theological education, and a contributor to bridging the gaps between pulpit, pew, and academy. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is the Reverend Dr. Yolanda Pierce, Professor and Dean of the Howard University School of Divinity. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you were raised in New York.
I am a New Yorker, born, raised, and very proud. New Yorkers are proud people.
So tell me what your childhood was like growing up in New York.
So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, had a pretty typical childhood, raised by my grandparents, and we were church kids. We were several generations of preachers and pastors and teachers, but I always knew that college was on the horizon, although I was the first in my family to go to college, and went to Princeton at 16.
And what about education was so fundamentally important within that environment, as you describe it, being church kids?
So for my grandparents, they saw education as the path to success, right, as the path to achievement for African Americans. They themselves, raised in the rural South, having come part of the Great Migration to New York, never had the opportunity to be educated. So for them, it was, of course you're going to college, of course you're going to school. And the entire community of the church really supported that. So for me, there was never any kind of problem thinking about both education and faith coming together. So I was encouraged to go. I didn't have any option about whether or not I was going to college, but it turned out that it was such a wonderful process, and I ended up having a great undergraduate experience. I found it to be an incredibly rewarding place. The work was hard. Everybody worked hard. There was a lot of studying. But all the professors taught. So unlike a very large state institution where many of the senior professors don't teach, I had an opportunity to take a class, an undergraduate class with Cornel West. I took a creative class with writing class with Toni Morrison. So everyone who was there, including the president at the time, actually taught classes. I did not know then what I know now as a professor, how refreshing that was. I had a great experience there.
And from Princeton, you went on to get degrees at Cornell, two master's degrees and a PhD at Cornell. What was different about the Cornell experience and your journey versus the Princeton experience?
By the time I got to Cornell, I knew something about higher education, and so probably took it a little bit more seriously. Cornell was a wonderful place, but Ithaca, New York was extremely cold, and it felt very isolated to me. And so even though I was able to pursue graduate degrees, I think I really had the sense of being socially isolated in far upstate New York, and I knew I was ready to come back closer to a city, closer to a place with a lot more diversity.
And as you moved to a place closer, you became an ordained Christian minister.
I never thought that I would be a minister or preacher or anything. I had had enough of it. And I think that, like a lot of kids, you leave home and you say, okay, well, that was good, and now I don't have to go. But, you know, there's something when you hit your 20s or so where you're actually looking for answers to questions, where you're looking at the foundation that you had been provided in life, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe there's something here. And so I found myself journeying through my 20s, asking some very tough questions about faith and religion, but always being attracted to community, the community that I had, the church home that I had, a real nexus of African-American culture and experience that really drew me and keeps me sustained to this very day. So I decided to not only pursue it in my academic work, but to go on and become ordained because I wanted to be able to, if I chose to, do ministry. Instead, higher education really called me, and I've been a professor for these past 15 years.
So I was an altar boy, for the sake of full disclosure. So this always fascinates me because I always feel that I was at that intersection of, you know, making that same type of decision. Now, you're at Princeton Theological Seminary. You were the Elmer G. Homrighausen Associate Professor of African American Religion and Literature.
That's right.
What was the focus of your work at that time?
So what my academic research is at the intersection of literature and African American religion. I'm interested in how these two very different areas speak to one another. What does religion tell us about literature, and what does literature tell us about religion? I'm specifically interested in womanist theology. I'm interested in the biographies and autobiographies of African Americans, particularly enslaved Africans and African Americans. I'm interested in how people navigate what they believe and how they write about that, how people talk about their faith journeys, how they talk about their faith crises, and how they talk about their doubts. And I think fundamentally my question has always been, why did people who had known 400 years of chattel slavery continue to believe in a God, particularly when the scripture of that God was used to justify their enslavement? That was my question. It still remains my question.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dean Yolanda Pierce, School of Divinity here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So just continuing along those lines of your theory, your last book, the title is Hell Without Fires, Slavery, Christianity, and the African-American Spiritual Narrative. To tell our listeners a little bit about that book.
So as I was reading in 18th and 19th century narratives written by either enslaved or formerly enslaved persons, many of them talked about their relationship to Christianity. And think what I was surprised by was that it's a very contested relationship. It wasn't just that these men and women, you know, believed in God, but many of them had doubts, they had fears, they expressed anxiety. They talked about the ability for the theology they believed in to be liberatory, but they also talked about the ability for that theology to also be very oppressive. And so there was such a nuance there that I saw in the 18th and 19th century narratives that I actually wish that we had today, a much more nuanced conversation about religion and public life.
And so as you look at the theology as from the perspective of academia, how do you see that intersection with helping either to heal what has happened in the past through that enslavement, through the same religions that people still practice today, versus is there some other source towards that salve for that wound, as it were?
So I think theology can be catharsis. I think that it can be healing. I think that for many individuals within theology, within a religious framework, they find a sense of comfort. They find a sense of purpose. But I also acknowledge that for some people, they find the opposite. They find questions. They find so many doubts. They find a crisis point. When I think about religion and public life, I think about spaces where we could have that conversation. That's why theological education is important to me, that people of different faiths, different backgrounds, different stages can sit down and talk about what does it mean to be religious or what does it mean to be non-religious, and what does that have to do with justice in public life, and what does religious understanding have to do with democracy? I'm really interested in democracy these days.
And so as you talk about democracy, all our presidential candidates have the passage of having to come out and express what their religious beliefs are. We saw former President Obama have to do that, had to distance himself from his minister that he had listened to, who he had listened to for many, many years. And then you have President Trump, who from time to time commits some of what some of us may describe as ungodly acts, but at the same time acts and does make statements that his philosophies are based on a very strong religious base, which is what fuels his political base as well.
I think that American people are not quite prepared yet to embrace or accept a presidential candidate who affirms non-belief or unbelief or is agnostic or an atheist. I think the expectation among the American people has been that a person that they elect will believe in God. I think that the questions for us have to do with what does it mean for our citizenship and our democracy to be full of diversity and religious diversity. The fact that President Obama had to distance himself not only from his minister, but from the perception that he was, in fact, a Muslim is so interesting, as if there's something wrong with being a Muslim. And so part of what I would hope, especially in theological education, is that we would actually do away with some of the stereotypes about religion and that we could have a real conversation about religious understanding. What does it mean to have a Jewish neighbor or Buddhist neighbor or a Christian neighbor? What does it mean to live in a democracy that has always been religiously diverse? We have had 400 years of religious diversity. In terms of enslaved Africans, we're talking about 25 to 30% of enslaved persons came to this country as practicing Muslims. There's always been Islam in this country. There's always been Judaism in this country. Instead, we have this perception of one very narrow notion of what it means to be both religious and American. It should be a much broader notion.
And as less Americans are attending church every week, it seems that that conversation is probably going to have to broaden.
We have to have the conversation about the group that's called nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the religious nuns, the people who have no particular religious affiliation, but still consider themselves to be spiritual, still might believe in a higher power or might believe in God, but don't go to church, don't go to mosque, don't go to temple. And so what do they do? What is their place? So we need to have that conversation, and we also need to have a conversation about the growing numbers of people who simply don't acknowledge any God whatsoever. They are always and have been a part of our democracy. And so this is a part of the religious understanding and tolerance, is that there will be people who will have no set of belief, and there will be people who have beliefs, but just not attached to any particular faith tradition as we've always recognized them. There's room at the table for all of these people.
Now, as the dean of the School of Divinity, the academia in religion today obviously is ever-changing, as you've just described. What are some of your vision points for the school as you move forward?
So any theological education today must be forward thinking. We're not preparing men and women for traditional ministry, even 25, 30 years ago, where the expectation was you finish an MDiv, you go and you pastor a church and you stay at that church for 30 or 40 years. We have to prepare students who are going to do work in all kinds of areas, from corporate America to social work to law to business. They want a theological education because they have certain ethical, moral, justice questions that theological education can address. And so we have to be forward thinking. We have to think about the relationship between religion and media. That has been a crisis point in our nation really over the past few months. We have to think about the relationship between religion and business, for instance. What does it mean to have certain ethical practices in business that are rooted and grounded for some people in their faith, but deeply connected to the work that they do that is outside of a church setting? And so for me, thinking about theological education today is thinking about training men and women for the world that they will inherit, in which they will likely not be a pastor or a minister, but will work in a particular chosen vocation, but using the tools of critical thinking and writing and ethical and moral and justice-oriented research in order to do the jobs they really feel called to do.
And how do you see the issue of gender diversity as it is embedded today in academia of religion?
We still see such gender disparity in theological education, even though the students have achieved a certain kind of equity in terms of almost 50% men and women. We still see a lot of religious leadership as primarily men. We still see questions about theological education and leadership in terms of women, what's their role and what's their place. For some of us, these are settled issues. For others, these are still questions that people are pondering, but more and more women are seeking theological education, not just for the church, but to do the other ministries to which they're called.
And as we leave and close, tell our listeners why the School of Divinity in 2017-2018.
So the School of Divinity stands on the shoulders of some giants, the shoulders of a Howard Thurman, the shoulders of a Benjamin Elijah Mays. But not only do we stand on the shoulders of these giants, we have this rich legacy of 150 years. We are the founding of Howard University. We begin at the very beginning. But we're also a part of its future in terms of moving forward. Every question that we ask at the School of Divinity is this right and is this just and is this true? I think those are questions that can be applicable to any field of study. I think those are questions that our nation needs now more than ever. I think we need theologically trained people at the tables, whether they're in corporate America or whether that's at a medical school. We need people who are not afraid to ask the tough questions about faith, about religion, about relationships, about justice, about ethics, and about morals, and to sit at the table with others who might disagree with them but come to some great conclusions.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been the Dean of the School of Divinity here at Howard University, Dr. Yolanda Pierce. And I have to say, the School of Divinity is the moral compass for Howard University, and she certainly is the right leader at the right time. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.